Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, you made it. It's time for Brewing After Hours with Sarah Flora.
Beer is like sunshine for the belly.
Hi, I'm Sarah Flora. You may know me as Flora Brewing on Instagram and YouTube, where I dive into the technical aspects of making beer. My new podcast, Brewing After Hours, is going to take a different look at the history and stories behind beer. I'm going to bring you a story a week, as well as conversations with homebrewers and professionals in the industry. And of course, we'll be cracking some beers along the way. Welcome to Brewing After Hours. I'm your host, Sarah Flora. So we're talking about homebrew clubs and the legality of homebrewing in general today. So homebrewing has been around since beer has been around. Traditionally, beer was made in the home, like most other food items. And as most of you know, the United States has a bit of a strange history with alcohol. Hello, Prohibition. Prohibition was also known as the Noble Experiment, which I think that is debatable. And it began as an effort to reduce crime and pretty much fix every problem in society. This makes the phrase, a cure-all cures nothing, come to mind. Though in the beginning, Prohibition did reduce the amount of alcohol being consumed through good old supply and demand economics, it raised the amount of other potentially more dangerous substances being consumed, such as patent medicines that contained morphine and cocaine. In the end, Prohibition may have actually made alcohol more accessible because there were more hidden speakeasies in some places than there were bars previously. With the prohibition of alcohol obviously came a prohibition of homebrewing. It would have been completely defeating the purpose if they had only banned commercial breweries from making beer, obviously. Of course, a ban doesn't mean people stopped making beer. Some breweries sold off supplies to homebrewers, and there were even extract kits being made around the year 1900. Most people didn't love the homebrew that was being produced during Prohibition, so once alcohol was legal again, they switched back to commercial varieties. If you think about the typical homebrewer in the 1920s, they probably had very little guidance on how to brew properly, and also probably didn't even own a refrigerator. So you can imagine that there was probably a good deal of off flavors in their brews. Now, at the end of Prohibition, even though alcohol was allowed again, that doesn't mean homebrewing became legal again. For 46 years after Prohibition ended, homebrewing was federally illegal. Fortunately, in 1976, a group of homebrewers in California lobbied Senator Alan Cranston to push forward federal legislation to legalize it. It wasn't that easy, though. They tried twice and failed, and finally got it on a Jimmy Carter's desk by including it in a transportation bill. This made Jimmy Carter a bit of a homebrewing hero, even though he was known to seldom imbibe and preferred a white wine over a glass of beer. If you think that in 1978, when H.R. 1337 was signed into law, that everyone in the U.S. was suddenly allowed to homebrew, you would be wrong. Each state had to also decide to legalize homebrew. This is the problem with the United States sometimes. There's a lot of bureaucracy. The last two holdouts in the country were Mississippi and Alabama, who legalized homebrewing in 2013. For homebrewers, it seems Prohibition lasted 93 years instead of the 13 it lasted for commercial brewers. Fortunately, we're a tenacious bunch who will fight for the hobby. Now let's chat with the president and co-founder of the SoCal Cerveceros and owner of Norwalk Brewhouse, Ray Ricky Rivera.
Member of the Los Angeles Homebrew Club, SoCal Cerveceros, for I think 3 years now, and I can vouch it is one of the best homebrew clubs you will ever find. Though it's a Latino homebrew club, and it's the largest Latino homebrew club in the United States, the group has been so welcoming of female homebrewers of all races, and Ray himself is the one who got me into this club and was like messaging me on Instagram. We've even created a female-focused group within the group called the Cerveceras, and it has been such a valuable resource to learn and connect with the homebrew community here in LA. So I'm so excited to have you on the show, Ray. Thank you for taking the time.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much for having me on the show. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a fan of the podcast, so I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
So we have to start from the beginning. How did SoCal Cerveceros start and become the size it is today?
Sure. Well, in the beginning, we were really small. it really started just a couple guys, myself and Agustin from Brujeria Company. I was on Facebook one day and I just posted, hey, is anybody I know homebrew? And he was, I didn't even know we were Facebook friends. And he replied and was like, hey, what's up, dude? How, you know, I'm a homebrewer. I've been at it for several years. What do you need? So from that reply, we started this kind of Facebook friendship over homebrewing. I was really new to it. This is in 2014. I started on 1 gallon stovetop batches and I didn't know anybody, none of my friends, none of my family, nobody homebrewed. And you know, you've been there, you go online and you Google things, questions regarding homebrew, and you're just, there's a ton of things to read and to find. And so it was a lot to take in. So he and I struck up this conversation, which resulted in this kind of homebrew friendship. And one thing led to another, and it was like, hey, you want to start a club? And he was interested, and he happened to have some friends that he already homebrewed with. And so he went back to his friends, and I think there was like, I don't know, he knew maybe 3 or 4 people. And we got together one night, and there was a total of 7 of us, just brand new to each other, you know, just hanging out, sharing homebrew, just really getting to know each other. And from that moment on, word started to circulate. We started to meet regularly every 3rd Friday of the month. And, you know, little by little, the club started to grow. We started to get more members. It was like 7, and then I think it went to like 9. And then a few months later, we were 12. And today we're at 250. And, you wanted to know how we got to the size we are. So as you mentioned, us being a Latino club, in the beginning, we definitely were 100% Latino, all dudes. And we soon realized that like it's cool to be Latino, a Latino club, because for one, it didn't exist. Like anywhere we look, Southern California, Central, Northern Cali, there was no club that was fully Latino focused. And as we started to search wider and further, nothing in the Midwest, nothing in the East, on the East Coast. And so it was kind of shocking to think that in 2015, we were the only Latino homebrew club around. And that's not to say there wasn't other Latino homebrewers, because in Southern California, now we know there's so many. So we started off 7 guys, 9, 12. And then we were like, man, there's got to be some women out here, some Latinas that homebrew as well. Sure enough, there are, and there were, and it took a little while for us to find any, only because, you know, people would come to the meetings early on and they'd see a bunch of dudes drinking, a bunch of random dudes. And so I think that kind of turned some women off. And, you know, of course, like, who wants to be drinking with a bunch of random dudes you don't know? So what really helped us on, what really helped us early on to grow our women membership was that we started to see men show up with their like girlfriend or wife, and they were interested. And so what we did was we're like, okay, if we're seeing a lot of couples come, whether it be a man and wife or wife and wife or what have you, we're like, let's offer a couples membership option, you know, and open it up to not just like, you know, man and wife or brother, sister, whatever. Let's try to, you know, recruit more people that way. So we noticed that really helped us out a lot. So there was in the beginning, when we started to recruit more women or try to recruit more women, when we opened it up to couples, that helped us out big time. So it's funny because early on, you'd see, let's say, you know, somebody brought their wife just because their wife was like, you know, supporting their husband and checking out where, you know, what's this club you're going to? And they're just there to hang out. And then, you know, a few months later, they're brewing. They're now a brewer and they're all up in the meeting and hanging out and having a great time. So that really helped us. And once there was about, I don't know, maybe 6, 7 women brewers, we started to get like, not just women who were there supporting their whatever girlfriend, boyfriend, or what have you, but legit brewers like yourself. We started to find more people, and just as we started to exist longer, we started to meet more people. And then, you know, the more actual avid brewers that came to us, and they brought their friends, and it just started to kind of snowball.
Yeah, I actually can personally say that the couples membership helped me out because I joined as a couple with my work wife.
It's cool to see, like, when we were really new, we were new to everything, like new to homebrewing, new to being a club, new to this whole scene of homebrewers in Los Angeles. Again, there was nothing like that here in terms of being a quote unquote Latino focused homebrew club. Early on, there wasn't like any of our members winning homebrew comps or getting write-ups in the LA Times or things like that. And now I see, you know, people like you who have like this massive following on Instagram, social media, you've got your podcast, you are like a spokesperson for various brands. We have multiple homebrewers winning awards and all the competitions that are out there. And many of them are our women brewers and they hold their own. And now the SoCal Cerveceras exists and I'm super excited about that. It's like a club within a club. They do brew days with breweries and they do their own benefits and things like that and have their own just cool things going on. So it's been great to see everybody within the club growing and learning and just doing a bunch of cool shit, really.
Yeah, it really is. And some of the Cerveceros also have a podcast.
It's Brewed Up with Lori and Tyler.
Yeah, Lori and Tyler are two of my besties in the club. So check out their podcast as well. They are awesome homebrewers.
I just want to mention Lori Ann Gutierrez. Shout out to Lori. She is the vice president of the SoCal Cerveceros. She now holds the distinction of being the first woman VP of the club. I think that's cool. And Tyler is our director of memberships. And they're both doing a great job as board members, helping to lead and grow the club. I can praise them all day. You know, they're great brewers. They're great women. They're great people. They're great friends. And yeah, check out their podcast, Brewed Up.
Yeah, seriously. If you guys think I do a lot, like these women like outpace me, like it's no one's business. Okay, so let's talk about my favorite part of being a SoCal Cervecero, the festivals, because we can put on a festival like it's no one's business. The most notable festival that we do is called Coldchella. It's Coldxella, not to be confused with a music festival. So the Homebrew Fest is legendary. In some case, listeners may not be familiar with the festival. Can you give us a glimpse into why it's such a great event and a little bit about the name?
So Coldchella, for as much praise and kind of regional fame it has, it actually hasn't even been around that long. We launched it in 2018. We had this big thing planned. At least we tried to have this big thing planned. We had this venue booked in South Los Angeles. And like 2 weeks leading up to the festival, we get a call from the venue saying that it wasn't going to be ready for us to come in. They weren't going to host us because they were doing some construction work. So we had to scramble and find a whole different venue 2 weeks out. We ended up at a place in East Los Angeles. And this place was just basically a large parking lot behind a building. And so we had to squeeze into this kind of like, it's like, it was like two spaces split in half with a fence where you can walk between the two sides. And we fit in 20 homebrewers, a stage that had two bands, I think two or three DJs, and a handful of food vendors. Anyway, when it was time to open, we had a line down the street. We hit max capacity at 400 people, which, I mean, that doesn't sound like a huge festival, but this was like the very first one, and we did not anticipate it selling out so fast. There was press there. We got a lot of great reviews, and we were like, this is freaking awesome. Like, it was just a great time. You know, it was probably about 85 to 90% Latino, from the brewers pouring to the bands performing to the food that was being served. And everybody that was involved on the beer side was from the club. Right off the bat, it was clear that this was different. And I'm sure you've been to other festivals. And I'm sorry, I just took a swig of beer. I'm drinking the collab I did with Eagle Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called Love Fights Back. Guava Mango Blonde Ale we did. Okay, so back to Coachella, this first Coachella. We do this thing, 20 brewers, two live bands, DJs, food. It sells out. Great response. Everybody there was super cool. And I think what made it just a little bit different was many people that came to this festival were were new to Craft Beer Fest in general. There's a lot of people that follow us on social media. Like there's so many members within the club, and they all have their own following on their social media. And so they do a really great job of getting the word out. And so people came, and I think, you know, for the most part, people didn't know what to expect. And you get here and you see all these like people of color, and you're just like, holy shit, like I didn't even know this existed. So I think that had a lot to do with it. It was the people that were attending the festival were new to this whole craft beer movement, if you will. And so that went off really, really well. Now in 2019, there was a huge buzz, and we got like press leading up to it. And this time we were at a venue in downtown, and this is really the one that set us apart, the one that everybody remembers and everybody talks about. We basically more than tripled the size of the one in 2018. So we had 52 homebrewers. We had a massive stage with like five acts, you know, hip hop act, a live band, a reggae band, a ska band. We had like five DJs on stage, and we had several food vendors. We sold out the event at 1,500 max capacity people. For us, that was just from 400 to 1,500. That was massive. And again, you know, we had a really great response from media, both print and digital. There was a lot of press there. And I think we do a great job with getting the word out and getting people to cover us. And so that really, really helps us out. This one, again, what sets us apart is like, you don't roll up and see a bunch of dudes. And it's not this environment where you have to be afraid. You have to watch your back. Like, everybody's super cool. All the brewers are chill. The beer is good. The brewers bring their A game. There's so much great beer being poured. You were there. I think you poured your cherry saison.
Cherry saison. And I just remade it. It's my second beer I've made this year. I just finished.
That beer gets talked about so much. And it's a fan favorite, and I know you won a couple of awards for that one, right?
I think I've won like a couple bronze or something. It's always like the random beers that I win like good awards. It's like the cherry saison is just like everyone likes it for some reason. So easy to drink, and it's so high alcohol. Let me tell you, that Coachella, I was like deathly ill. I like had a sinus infection. I'm pretty sure I was running a fever. The only thing that is keeping me going was that 9% beer. I swear, I drank so much.
It was crazy because we thought, like, we went to see this venue when it was empty, and we're standing there in this massive grassy area, and it's open, like this enclosed kind of courtyard, but it's outside, it's open, and we're like, this is perfect for us, and it's huge. And then comes the day to set up, and we start loading everybody in, and we're laying there, you know, putting everybody in their place, and the space just starts to shrink. And we're like, oh my God, it's not as big as we thought it was, but we still managed to fit 1,500 people. But right away, we were already bigger than the space. To answer your question a little bit more, what I think sets us apart and why it's so different is that because the festival is really diverse. You know, you mentioned earlier that we were the largest Latino group. Well, I don't think we are the largest Latino group anymore. We've kind of morphed. And now we're just like a very diverse club. You know, we're people of color, and whether it be Asian, Black, Latino, or white, we're a pretty mixed crowd now. And so I don't know if we could continue to call ourselves the largest Latino anything. You know, when we were just seven, we were the largest Latino club in the country. But now, you know, I think we're, as far as women membership, we're in somewhere in the 40% range, maybe. So that's a pretty high number compared to other clubs.
When you go into one of these homebrew festivals, it is so surprising to me, at least, how many women there are.
Yeah, so I think for somebody who goes to beer fests, there's not a lot of diversity in terms of the programming, in terms of the production of beer fests in general, right? You go, there's going to be some rock music probably, and there's going to be a bunch of dudes, and the beer is always great, of course. But you come here and you're seeing different types of people, different kinds of people. The beers might be a little bit crazier, a little bit more experimental, if you will. And, you know, we try our best to really make Coachella be something different. Yes, of course, you know, every beer festival has beer. There's live music and there's food. Like that, that's all the same wherever you go. But it's like, what types of food are you, is there? What kind of music are you going to be listening to? You know, where are the brewers from? What do they look like? What do they make? And so when you come to Coachella, again, it's just this mix, this diverse event that people are not really used to. And I feel it closely represents what LA is. LA is such a diverse place. We have people from all over the world. And even though we are a pretty diverse club, I still think we have a lot, a long way to go. Because there's just so many different people out there. And I know there's got to be a home brewer from like every single culture, probably in Los Angeles, at least, that could join our club and pour at Coachella. But back real quick before I forget the story of the name. So in 2018, we were calling it Coachella, and it was spelled cold, and Chella was C-H-E-L-A. And for anybody who doesn't know, Chella is Spanish slang for beer. So it's basically cold beer festival, Coachella. And so we started promoting this. And again, like, as I mentioned, we were getting really good press. People were covering the event. Oh, you know, SoCal Set of Settles is coming. It was in the LA Times and LA Taco covered it. It got the attention of the Coachella Music Festival in Coachella, right? That's like one of the biggest festivals in the country. And so they sent us a cease and desist letter, their lawyers. And it said basically that we were infringing on their name, Coachella Music Festival name, which is really absurd because, for one, we weren't purposely trying to mislead the public to think that there was a connection there. And two, our Coachella event is a benefit. It's a fundraiser for a nonprofit called Gumball Foundation. And what Gumball does is they mentor middle school and high school students, help them start micro ventures, raise and save money for their college tuition. So they're there every step of the way, help them get into college. And that's what they do. So that's why we put this festival together, not only to showcase our members and their beer, but to help raise funds for this awesome foundation. And so we were kind of upset that this giant multi-million dollar money-making festival would send us a cease and desist. And we thought the name Coachella was just genius. We were really bummed because, well, for one, we didn't want to change the name. We were, you know, let's fight it, but we can't, you know, they have so much money. We couldn't go to court with it. And we just thought, you know what, instead of like wasting time going back and forth, let's just be productive here, move forward and figure it out. So we decided we didn't have to completely change the name. We could change the spelling and still have the same sound. So that X in Spanish produces the ch sound. And that's why it's spelled X-E-L-A. It still says Chella. So Coachella. And we've been left alone ever since. It kind of worked in our favor, given the X. You know, if you think about Latinx, which now many people use as a way to, as a reference to being Latino. So we're like, hey, that works. That's cool. X. All right. Yeah. And it looks cool. Looks dope. Still sounds good. So that's how we got to Coachella with an X.
So homebrewing and being a part of groups like SoCal Cerveceros offer those looking to break into the beer industry a chance to do so without necessarily formal schooling or professional mentorship. So can you share some of the ways that the club is providing educational experiences and opportunities for members like yourself who has opened their own brewery to pursue careers in craft beer?
Real quick, I haven't opened a brewery. I don't have a physical brick and mortar yet. Just to clarify that, I'm set up as a contract brewing operation. So that's that. But I'll get back to that because I want to answer the other part of your question first. What's really cool about the SoCal Cerveceros is that we have so many members that we have the novice homebrewer, the person just thinking about homebrewing who has maybe not even tried it yet, doesn't know where to begin, all the way on up to like commercial veteran seasoned brewer who's brewing on like a 30 barrel brew house, and then everything in between, people working at 20 barrel level, 10, 2, 3, what have you. A lot of our members have like almost pro setups in their backyards, It's crazy. What that does is that that creates this just wealth of info. So you can come to the SoCal Cerveceros and you can talk to somebody who has actually opened a brewery, or you can talk to somebody who's a head brewer of a commercial brewery, or you can talk to somebody who's been homebrewing for several years and may just know a little bit more than you. And so it's a really great place to get your questions answered. It's like a homebrew forum in real life. It's just, it's a great, huge resource. And if you are considering going, into the commercial beer space and you don't know what to do, you can come here and we can introduce you to somebody. You can talk to somebody again who's actually started a brewery. I think in the last 2 years, we had 3 commercial breweries open. There's 2 that are in the middle of their build out right now. And then you got me who's setting up as a contract brewing operation. Technically, I will be a beer wholesaler. So what that allows me to do is I have my own warehouse where I store product. I can go to any commercial brewery, buy beer from them, turn around and sell and distribute to retailers. Or I can have a brewery produce and package my own branded beer, which is, that's how I'm going to bring my beer to market. So I got my recipe. I got my branding. I'm going to partner with brewery friends of mine. They're going to brew to my recipe, my specs and what have you, and then package with all my branding. And then I turn around and self-distribute. And the reason for that is opening up a brewery is, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of capital. And for somebody like me, I don't want the headache. I don't want that kind of debt. I'm not really set up to take on that kind of debt. And so once I knew that brands contract brewed, but I didn't know how that actually happened. So I spent about a year doing research, talking to people, working with people. And I learned, okay, first you have to have a location, a warehouse. Then you got to get permission from the federal government. You got to get a permit. Then you got to get permission from the state level, from California. So you get your permit from the feds and you get your license from California that allows you to distribute within the state. And you've got your warehouse space leased. And then you're ready to go pretty much. You know, granted, you started your business, you filed all that LLC or what have you, corporation. You can go that route, or you can find a building, lease it out for 5 years, take 2 years, 2.5 years to do your build out, and then wait just as long to get all your permitting. Then you got to hire a staff, and you got to, you know, cut the concrete and redo the electrical and wait for your tanks to come in. I just knew that I wasn't down for that kind of undertaking. And also I'm a little different. Like, I love to homebrew. It's fun. It's a passion of mine, but I don't see myself running my own brew house day in and day out. I love thinking of recipes. I love naming beers. I love being creative. I love selling beer. I don't know that I want to be brewing 20 barrels of beer, you know, 3 times a week or whatever it may be. It has its pros and cons, right? Like, you have a brewery and you have a tap room and you're selling directly to the consumers, you're making the most money there. That's like the best way about it, right? But then of course, you know, you need so much capital to get to that point. Whereas somebody like you and I, maybe we have just a little bit of capital, but we can bring a beer to market and see how it does. And, you know, hopefully not go bankrupt and not, you know, lose our house or whatever. And yeah. And for any homebrewers listening, yes, I know a lot of homebrewers sell their beer. Just know it's risky. It is in fact illegal. And as the president of the SoCal Cerveceros, I am always having to remind people, even people that are not in the club, because I, you know, look, if you're a homebrewer, and you do have dreams of opening up a brewery or a brew pub or contract brewing, you're going to put in so much time, so much effort, so much money to get to the point where you can actually sell beer, be licensed. You don't want to mess up any of that by selling your homebrew for a couple bucks. So far, as I mentioned, you know, I had to figure out how this contract thing works. And it's technically not called contract brewing, right? You're a wholesaler. Like, that's what I'm going to be registered as, a beer and wine wholesaler who happens to contract brew. So now that I've figured out what it takes, what I need to do, I've got a partner, another SoCal Cervecero. I won't mention him now, but we're not things. Certain things are still, yes. Well, some things are still under wraps. I can say that we've leased a warehouse space. So we're working through all of our permits and licensing right now. And so at some point this year, hopefully before the end of the year, we will be fully licensed to self-distribute. So that's exciting. So while I get all that stuff in order, I've been doing beer collaborations. I've been partnering with friends of mine like Brujeria Company in Pico Rivera, South Central Brewing Company, Eagle Rock Brewing Company. I've got some more collabs in the works. I'm doing something with Hen House up in Santa Rosa, Slow Brew up in San Luis Obispo. What I've been doing is I've been putting together these beer projects where we leverage beer to raise money for a certain social cause that I feel I want Norwalk Brewhouse brand to support. So it's part of my business plan. It's something that I want to continue to do. And at this point, now I'm not technically licensed to sell and distribute, but I can definitely organize these beer collabs. I hang out on Brew Day. I help with the recipe build. I help with all the marketing. I got my logo on the beer label. So I'm definitely a part of these collaborations. So it helps me build my brand, get more experience, learn the business more, build my relationships with these breweries, as well as support great causes. And so I told you earlier that I was drinking Love Fights Back, which was the first collab that I did with Eagle Rock Brewery. And really, the way this collab came about was I was at home. You know, the pandemic had happened. I was at home with my wife and kids, glued to the television, seeing everything happen post George Floyd murder, all the uprising. And, you know, I have Black cousins. I have a Black transgender male cousin, and I couldn't shake this idea, like, I'm privileged because I'm a man, a male. I have experienced my own run-ins with police, being profiled and being harassed and what have you. But even at that, I'm not a Black man. So I'm still privileged to a certain degree. And so that thought was just like blowing my mind. Like, you know, and I started to worry, like, you know, I wonder how my Black friends are doing. I wonder how my Black relatives are doing. Like, this has got to be so heavy for them right now. I mean, always, right? Just in general. And so I'm sitting there, I'm watching things unfold on TV, and I'm like, there's something that I could do, you know, more than just tweeting, more than just posting a Black square on Instagram or whatever. And so I was like, okay, well, what do I have access to? I've spent 20 years in music. So I've got this massive music network. I'm now doing beer stuff. So I've got the SoCal Cerveceros and everybody connected to that. So I thought, okay, is there a way for me to bring music and beer together and just kind of make some kind of contribution to the cause? And so on the beer label for Love Fights Back, you'll see there's a depiction. Well, it's actually his logo. There's a local rapper from Los Angeles called Tumex. He's kind of this like legendary underground rapper. He's been around since the 90s. He has a song called Love Fights Back. And those lyrics, when you think of those lyrics, it's like, it was perfect for this thing that I was, this idea that I had, or this feeling, if you will. Some of the lyrics say, like, you know, when all else fails, love fights back. Anyways, he says that throughout the song, love fights back, love fights back. I was thinking about Jeremy and Ting over at Eagle Rock. I shot them an email. I was like, hey, look, this is what I'm dealing in the moment. I think we could do something with beer and with music. There's a song. I don't know. What do you guys think? And they were like, you know what, Jeremy, I'm talking to Jeremy here. And he was like, Ting and I have been having the same conversation. Like, we're watching the news as well, you know, and this is pretty heavy and we want to do something. And we were thinking about doing some kind of beer to help a local nonprofit working in, you know, social justice. And this was around the time Black is Beautiful was happening. So, you know, a lot of breweries were having this conversation. And so Jeremy and Ting were like, let's do a beer collab. And so I brought on Tumex and we called the beer Love Fights Back. We added a QR code to the can and people could scan the QR code and listen to Jeremy, myself, Tumex, basically just talk about what's happening in the world right now, how we feel about it, how we feel we can contribute and we can help make some type of positive change. And proceeds from the beer sales are going to the Urban Peace Urban Peace Institute in Los Angeles, which works throughout underserved communities throughout Los Angeles. And they help with various social things from like health to job placement and to, you know, just various things around social and racial justice. And so that beer, you know, doing that, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like we brought music together with beer. We're raising money for a nonprofit. This is fun for me. This is right up my alley. I want to continue doing this. And so that's what I'm doing right now while I wait to release my own commercial beer. That is not a beer raising funds for a nonprofit. But as I grow and I scale, I want to, you know, continue to do these projects throughout the life of the business. So that's what I'm doing. Sorry for the super long answer.
No, I love it. So more like brewery owners and people working in beer that I talk to, the more aware I am that most brewery people that I talk to are trying to give back to the community in some way. And it's just so inspiring. While we wrap up, let us know anything happening new with the so-called Cerveceros now that we're slowly getting out of quarantine, and where we can find you, Norwalk Brewhouse, SoCal Cerveceros on the internet and in real life.
So with the SoCal Cerveceros, we are itching to get back to in-person meetings. We've been virtual the entire year that we've been in the pandemic. We don't know how soon we will be able to all be together again in the same place. But I can say that as far as Coachella is concerned, we are looking at 2022, the summer of 2022. And again, our partner for that is the Gumball Foundation. So we kind of work together to produce this festival. And right now we are talking, well, not we, but the director of Gumball has a couple of venues that he was talking to before the pandemic happened. So hopefully we can announce pretty soon where the next Coachella will be, but that is looking like summer 2022. Granted, we don't see another, you know, uptick in pandemic cases and things like that, or COVID cases rather. Hopefully this is, you know, as we close 2021, we also close the door on COVID moving forward. So looking forward to that. As far as SoCal Cerveceros, we are still accepting new members. People are joining monthly, which is great. We grew even during the pandemic, which is crazy to me, but we're growing fast continually. We just celebrated 5 years last year during the pandemic. We were hoping to have a big old celebration at Coachella, but you know, didn't happen. We don't know when we're going to be able to meet again in person, but hopefully soon. The board talks about this often. We get asked the question often, you know, when are we going to have a bottle share? When are we going to have a brew day? When are we going to get together? And we really, really want to, but we still need to be safe. You know, unfortunately, we've had some members, had family members who passed away from COVID. One of our members was really sick in the hospital, close call there. But luckily, that was the extent of it. And as far as I know, everybody else has been okay. But our members are super busy. You're super busy. You're a member. So, you know, more podcasts, more interviews are on the way from you, from Brewed Up. And there's other people. Again, like I mentioned, there's a couple breweries that are doing their build out. One of them is La Bodega Brewing Company in the city of Whittier. We have Brewing Crew Ale House in Salinas. They're in the middle of their brew out. They're not in LA. They're still members, but they're in Salinas. So if you're ever in Central California, you could check them out. And me, Norwalk Brew House, again, I'm waiting to get licensed. Once that is in place, I will be releasing my first beer, hopefully before the year is over. SoCal Cerveceros, find us on Instagram at SoCal Cerveceros. You can also follow the SoCal Cerveceras. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Find us, as well as Norwalk Brewhouse. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Go find me.
Lori Gutierrez. I live in South Los Angeles, and I'm the vice president of SoCal Cerveceros. I first heard about the Cerveceros about 4 or 5 years ago from a friend. She was like, there's this group of homebrewers. And at the time, I was making cider and thought, whoa, a club? That sounds cool. So I was looking around at clubs, didn't really act on it. And then I connected with the president, Ray Rivera, and he said, you should come check us out. And I did. The first meeting was really great. The vibe was exactly what I wanted. And I'm so glad I did. That was about 3 years ago. I think any homebrew club, what they're going to provide for you is a community. And when you're in a community, you can network. That's when you can learn, you can engage, and you can like evolve on your own. I do not think I would be the brewer that I am if it wasn't for the SoCal Cerveceros, because the environment was so inclusive and diverse. And I think for me and for a lot of people, that's kind of the best environment for me to thrive in or for me to learn in. It's great to be able to connect with people, ask questions. We have a Slack social media network platform where we just can connect with each other. It's an app on our phones. And basically, any time of the day, you can ask a brewing question, and you might get anywhere between 1 and 18 answers. It's really, really great. And then also, of course, all the chisme, the gossip, and getting together for meetings and sharing homebrew. That's the best. I think SoCal Cerveceros, for me, was different just because the group leads with the diversity inclusion piece. I'm white. I'm not Latina. But I did feel very comfortable within the group because that's the environment, like I said, that I thrive the most in, an inclusive environment that's respectful of women, respectful of people with other views. Like I said, I was making cider. All these guys were making beers, and they welcomed me with open arms. So it was just like a really great connection.
My name is Tyler Sadler. I am co-host of Brewed Up Podcast, a podcast about homebrewing and craft beer that I co-host with Lori Gutierrez, and I'm also in SoCal Cerveceros. So what I do in beer, wow, there's so many things. So like I mentioned before, I do the podcast, Brewed Up Podcast, with Lori Gutierrez. I am in a homebrew club called SoCal Cerveceros, which was primarily a Latino-based homebrew club, started about 5 years ago. Currently, it is super diverse, men, women, people of all races, colors, etc., and backgrounds. I also work full-time at a homebrew supply shop called Simi Valley Homebrew Shop. There's a few more things, but I would say that's generally the main things. And then obviously, I am just a passionate homebrewer at home. I love homebrewing, and it's one of my favorite things to do. My role in SoCal Cerveceros is I am currently the director of membership on the board of directors. So basically, my main role is to keep track of everyone as much as I can with dues, try and get people involved, just try and stay organized, and just for myself, stay active and be a voice and someone that members of our club can go to and ask questions, etc. In terms of where I'm based in LA, I am in the San Fernando Valley, specifically in Reseda. I've actually lived up here since I graduated from college in 2012. So yeah, I love the Valley, and I have no intention of leaving anytime soon. I've been a member of SoCal Cerveceros now for, I would say, almost 3 years. I was invited via Instagram DM by Ray, Ricky Rivera, who is our current president. He, I guess, saw that I had followed the page and just literally directly reached out to me saying that I was a woman and a woman of color. And he is very avid about, you know, having more women in the club, having more people of color in the club, and was just like, hey, come to our next meeting at Boomtown. Kind of just sucked it up and went all by myself. It was really great. That's where I met Ray, Lori, Mamo, a lot of my closest friends in the club, and the rest is history. So that was how I got started in the club. In terms of how it's played a part in my home brewing journey and professional journey, I would say I would definitely not be the home brewer I am today without SoCal Cerveceros. I mean, the club is huge. We have a huge member base, a lot of people involved and active, and a lot of people brewing. I mean, veteran brewers, new brewers, and we've got this Slack channel that is open to everyone, and you can just ask all the questions you can or you want. People are very open to answering questions, which is cool. And a lot of people, obviously right now it's a little different, but a lot of people back then were like, yeah, come over, come to my brew days. And so I went to a ton of brew days back in the day. I learned a lot from people that are local to me in the Valley. Learned a lot just from asking questions as I started to know more people in the club in my early days, just hitting them up on Instagram. And obviously when we're having in-person meetings, getting feedback on my homebrew, which was, you know, heartbreaking, but also fun. But it's like, constructive criticism is one of those things in any creative art form that is going to make you better. And I think it has definitely helped me to become the brewer I am today. In terms of professionally, I mean, I work at a homebrew store now. I think my passion for homebrewing that was built from being in the club made me even consider working full time in the homebrewing industry. It seemed like a crazy idea a year ago, but I've since now been working. I started part-time at Simi Valley a year ago, and now I'm working full-time as of this year. It definitely helped push me into the mindset of like, yeah, this is something you love, make it a career, and just go for it. And the opportunity presented itself, and I'm glad it did, because now I'm super happy at my job. I would definitely recommend joining a homebrew club to women, learning to brew, especially, I mean, I'm just going to plug SoCal Cerveceros because we do make a point in making it known that we will wholeheartedly accept anyone and everyone. I'm not saying that other homebrew clubs are, you know, anti-female. No, definitely not. I just say like our club in particular is incredibly open to women, and we've got a bunch that are part of the club. We even have our own separate thing called SoCal Cerveceras and a group of fantastic women. But yeah, I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's clubs all around the country, all around the world. I would say definitely join homebrew clubs in particular should be that resource for information, education. We have a ton of educational seminars that we do. Even over COVID, we had a lot of heavy hitters in the industry come and like talk to us about brewing and specific niche parts of brewing. We've had a bunch of breweries on that we got to learn a lot from and ask questions. And it's a network of people who are working in the industry. I mean, we've got members that own breweries and that have hired members, and we have members that work at breweries, etc., work at homebrew stores, that own homebrew stores. And so we've got a huge network of professional people in the industry that can provide, like, you know, resource jobs potentially, etc. So I would say SoCal Cerveceros is a huge resource, and hopefully most clubs, you know, geared towards getting that way. I know we are unique in that we are massive and we are super spread out, but, you know, I think it's a good goal to have as a homebrew club to create that community and that network and that resource. So
drinking beer, it makes you happy. It makes me happy too. It's true. Let's raise a toast, drink it up, sip it down, gallop it, toot sweet.
Thanks for listening to Brewing After Hours on the Believe Podcast Network. Find the show and lots of other great shows at Believe.com. If you're digging the show, please subscribe and rate the show on your preferred streaming platform. A special thank you to Honus Honus, the lyrical genius behind my favorite band, Man Man. who created the song you hear at the beginning of my podcast.
Beer is like sunshine for the belly.
Check the band's new album and more at manmanbands.com and at manmanbandsband on Instagram. If you're looking for some homebrewing tips, make sure to follow me on Instagram at flora_brewing or subscribe to Flora Brewing on YouTube. For ad-free brewing tutorials and reviews, plus more one-on-one experience, become a Patreon member. It's just patreon.com/flora_brewing. Now, I really need a drink. I'll catch up with you all next week. Thanks again for listening, and a friendly reminder to support your local craft brewery.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.